In this episode of the Backend Engineering Show, I would like to talk about threading multi-threaded application, specifically within the context of networking and connection management. To be more specific even than that, TCP connection management. It's very critical in backend applications that you have a socket that you listen to, whether this is a web server, whether this is an SSH server, whether this is a custom-made protocol that you built, gRPC, any other protocol, right? But the challenge becomes, how do you accept connections from clients, and how much can a single box, right, manage all these connections from all these clients? This is what I want to talk about in this episode. Let's jump into it. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nasser. This is the show where we discuss the art and the craft of building software and cover recent news on backend technologies. If you enjoy the show, make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel and rate it on Spotify and Apple Podcast. With that said, let's get on the show. Welcome to the Backend Engineering Show with your host, Hussein Nelson. And this is our series, our laid-back series, where we sit down and discuss interesting topics, and specifically to backend engineering. It's a podcast, so you can listen to it on your favorite podcast player. I usually don't add any graphic at all. It's supposed to be just a talking head video. So if you like this kind of content, consider subscribing to this channel and check us out on the Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Yeah, I do have other content on this channel. If you, this is not your cup of tea, of course, I understand. I have all sorts of other content. I have crash courses. I have, tutorials. I have hands-on stuff using software, With that out of the way, let's get into it. In the early days, very, very, very early days of computing, when you spin up a process and you had a single CPU on your host machine, and that process executes certain task, let's say it accepts a connection, and that connection now has some sort of a request, let's say it's an HTTP request, once it determines where the request starts and where the request ends, that logic of the translation of a request will be taken to the application, and then application start processing it, whatever that means. If it's a git slash API, that will make a request to some other database that's somewhere else, so we'll establish another connection to other database, sends a request, sends the SQL command or the key value request to get a value. Regardless what it is, the processing, some of the processing will be localized within that instance, so it will consume CPU power from that host. Some of the kind of the request will be not CPU bound, maybe IO bound, whether this is a network call or a desk call. Hey, I'm going to the desk. So that's why very important to understand the nature of your backend, and whether it's, does it cost CPU or does it cost IO? And this is an episode by itself, because you can scale differently based on that. But regardless, if you assume it's a CPU intensive app where you're doing processing in the machine itself, right, even after sending a request to the database, getting response, you're kind of doing a localized processing. Even if you don't know it, you're probably using a library that does that kind of processing, especially the serialization, deserialization. That's costly. Encryption, decryption of TLS, all of this stuff is happening without us knowing. And I try as much as possible, at least this is for myself, to erase all this ambiguity and you know, the vagueness of anything that I use by understanding what every single thing I use, what is actually doing, right? It's not everyone's cup of tea, I understand, but I like to understand everything I use. That's just me. It's just keeps your eye open. In the old days, when you have this single core and you have single process, that core will be occupied to your process, right? And your host might have multiple processes and they are sharing, you know, time sharing this CPU. I'm like, oh, let's stop there. I'm done. Take over CPU, right? Take over the next process, process three, you can take over. And the operating system is scheduling these things, you know? Move a few more years, a decade maybe in the future. And now we're able to make CPUs more powerful. You know, we have more powerful CPUs. The single core is powerful. Move a little bit forward, and now we have the ability to add multiple cores in a processor. So you have a processor, but that processor will have multiple cores. So there's dual cores. Technically, think of two CPUs, you know, and we have 4 cores, 8 cores, so on. With that in mind, we don't have contention between different applications now, right? Because if I my single process app will get a core, and the other host processes can use other cores, that's pretty neat. I no longer share one core between all the processing. But developers thought about it and says, aha, that sounds like a great idea. What if my app, I am greedy. My app is a single process, but what if my app actually consists of multiple processes or multiple threads? A process and a thread is it's almost like splitting hairs when it comes to like process and a thread, especially in Linux. I think a process is a thread. It's just like they share the same memory, sort of speak, right? So what people invented says, like, all right, let's just spin up multiple threads. Yeah? So multiple worker threads, and we have one main thread, and let them do the work in parallel. Why? Because now not only I have access to one core, my multiple threads can utilize multiple cores, you know, at the same time. And that was so, even, I'm trying to remember, even in the 2006 and 2007, multi-threading was the jam, you know, like everybody was talking about multi-threading. It's like, oh yeah, you have to get into multi-threading. Like maybe it was earlier than that, but when I, because 2005 was the start of my career, and this is where I started hearing about multi-threading. And it's just being a lot of people start talking about it. So now a lot of people move to multi-threading because of the performance benefit that they might get, right? Because now I can share multiple CPU. If a single process needs X amount of CPU and I can parallelize that work, let's spin up multiple threads, right? And let divide this work and let them all spin up their own task, and they execute these tasks in parallel, concurrently, if you will. That was a revelation. So now we are using multiple cores. So the app is faster. But just like any human evolution. Nothing comes without its own problems. Almost every solution we create as engineers comes with its own downsides. I can't think of anything that we created, you know, software engineering wise, that didn't come with its own downside. It's always the case. Correct me if I'm wrong. What's the problem with multi-threading? Well, the benefits of multi-threading is obvious. The problems with multi-threading is two things that I can think of. First, the management of the threads and resource access. We mentioned that when you spin up a process, you are allocated a certain amount of memory, right? It's called the heap. You can dump your stuff there. But then, and we never had this problem before with a single process, because a single process is a single process, you know? When a single process wants to read a variable, it can go ahead and read that variable. And when it wants to write that variable, nobody's writing to that variable except itself. But with multi-threading, all these threads shares the same memory. It's a shared memory when it comes to just that process. You can also have shared memory between processes as well, I suppose. No, I'm pretty sure you can. I think Postgres has that concept. And it's an operating system thing. I think you can have a dedicated shared memory. But the moment you have a shared memory between these threads, those guys start competing on these resources, because no two threads can access the same variable at the same time. You might say, why? They can. Sure, they can. Let them do that. But you get undesired results. Mm-hmm. This is a whole thing I talk about in my database course when it comes to the ACID thing, like atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. We have the same problem there, right? Because we are a concurrent system database after all. So you have two transactions trying to update the same row. What does that mean? What do we do? So the simplest thing to do is to acquire a mutex or a lock. I think it's the same thing, no? Where if a thread wants to write something, it acquires a mutex on it. It locks it. It says, hey, this variable I'm about to write to it, nobody can write to it or nobody can read to it at all. So if another thread wants to do something to that, it's blocked. So the management of this stuff is absolutely challenging. A lot of people liked it in the beginning, but the more they got into it, the more complex your app becomes. Now, things that you used to not worry about, now you have to worry about them at the cost of an additional CPU. So you're finding yourself serializing things. The multi-threaded apps, all of a sudden, now if these threads are completely isolated, you won the jackpot. But if they need to access the same variable, which guess what? Almost most of the time, you're going to need to access the same variable, either to read or to write, to increment a value. Even increment is a very hard problem to solve. It's like, how do you increment something? You have to serialize it. And when I say serialize, I mean you have to lock it so that the other thread cannot both of the time. Let's take an example. Let's say increment the variable foo, right? If you have two threads that does the increment, both of them will read the value, both of them will read zero, both of them will increment it, and then both of them will store one. That's not correct, right? Because incrementing in that particular case should give you 0, 1, and 2. Instead, you got 1. So that's just a simple example of where things can go wrong. Yeah. But so now we talked about multi-threading. Of one of the problems with multi-threading is the management of the threads. The second problem that I think of is isolation. In a bad way. If every thread is running in isolation, we don't know what the workload of these threads. We don't know if this thread is overloaded compared to this thread that might not be overloaded. So as a result, you might not have even load balancing between these threads, right? So in order to do that, you have to introduce a manager, a coordinator, right? More complexity. But it is what it is. So why am I talking about multi-threading? Right? We all know what multi-threading is, but I thought it's very critical to talk about, and then we're going to link it back to socket management and connection management here. You see, when you have a web application, a Node.js application, and Node.js is a bad example, it's a single thread, so let's take it out of the equation. Let's say you built your own app from using C or Go. Yeah. And you have a single thread, and you said, hey, I want to listen on port 80. That's a web app, HTTP. Okay. So when you listen on port 80, what happened is you're telling the operating system that, hey, on this particular IP address, I'm listening to port 80. And you can specify which IP address. You might say, what does that mean? I should have only one IP address. Nope. You have so many IP addresses on your machine. You have the loopback. That's an IP address. You might have an Ethernet. That has an IP address. Might have a Wi-Fi. That has an IP address. Might have a Docker bridged interface NIC. You might have a virtual NIC. You might have another Ethernet port. Yeah, and all of these network card, another NIC, I mean, can have their own IP address. They have their own connected to their own gateway, and they have another completely different IP and a different subnet. So when you listen in a specific interface, right, you can listen on all of them if you want. And sadly, that's the default in most. I didn't understand this before. I recently learned it, like, in the past year. Like, listening is very expensive. And I'm really worried that the default, when you don't specify, hey, listen 80, even in Node.js, most apps, when you listen, it's listening on all interfaces. Why? I would love, I guess they did it for simplicity, but just like anything in engineering, the moment you simplify the developer experience by making the code easier, you're introducing, you're hiding abstractions, right? You're introducing abstraction which hides the complexity of these interfaces, right? And this is a perfect example. When you just listen on port 80, I know I'm going all over the place, but I think it's all related. So if you listen on port 80, which is the default, like without and with specifying a host, what will happen is it will listen to a pseudo IP address called 0.0.0.0, right? Which means listen on all interfaces. And to nitpick, actually, I think it listens to all IPv4 interfaces, right? If you do FFFF, that listens to all IPv6. I might be wrong on that one, but just a guess, right? So this listens all interfaces. Why? What if you're building like an admin API, right? And this admin API shouldn't only be accessed within the machine itself or within a specific interface. So if that host happened to have a public IP address and you wrote your application in a way such that it listens to all IP addresses by default, then you just expose your admin API to the public. That's why all these leaks happen with Elasticsearch leak and MongoDB leak and Postgres leak, right? Because when Postgres listens to Aspora, when MongoDB listens, it listens to all IP addresses. I think the default should be changed. The default should be, hey, You tell me which interface to listen to. And I understand that's not convenient for programming. But I think we should, at some point we should stop simplifying everything, because that's not the way to go. Right? Just simplifying everything, because eventually you're gonna get bit in the ass. That's what was gonna happen, right? Yeah, you simplify the API. And that's true for everything we do in software engineering. Look at all the countless libraries, all competing to make the code shorter. And instead of writing, oh, my code is only 5 lines of code. Oh, my code is 3 lines of code. My code is 1 line of code. In 1 line of code, you can do all of this stuff. These things really scares me, because you know the developer who's going to use this, you have no clue what's going on behind that 1 line of code, you know? And that is really creepy, right? Hey, if you know what's going on, all power to you. But if you don't, and you're just using an app, and there's just, hey, 1 line of code, and voila, I built Twitter. That's a whole thing by itself. I don't know. Yeah, I know. We'll come back to the point. Yeah, so listening on port, we talked about all these IPv4 thing, IP interfaces. But we listened. We have a listener, and it's a single thread listener. Yeah. So when you listen, what happens is the operating system will allocate, look at the backlog for you, a queue, if you will. Yeah. Again, this is just TCP. Let's not go through UDP right now, because HTTP 1 and HTTP 2 is TCP. So let's just assume TCP for now. If you listen, the operating system will allocate a queue for you. And you can specify the length of this queue. I think it's 1,000 by default. And that queue is in the kernel memory. So you're here at the user space. You listened, your application is running. You asked the operating system, hey, I'm listening to port 80. The OS will create, all right, it says, okay, I'm listening on the loopback 127.7001, right? Let's say I'm practicing hygiene here, and I only listen to the loopback because I don't really need to listen to anything else. So the OS will create this two queues for us, something called the send queue and something called the accept queue, right? What are all these? Well, we talked about how the TCP works, right? There is a SYN, SYNACK, and then ACK, which is the three-way handshake. So every time a client wants to connect to your server on that specific IP address, on that specific port, which is 80, it will need to send a SYN packet, TCP segment, which is carried in an IP packet and is sent to that. The operating system receives it through the network interface controller, right? Or some people like to call it card, network interface card. Same thing, right? That network card will take that frame and then package it up into an IP packet and then package it up into a TCP segment and then ship it to the operating system. And I think it doesn't even do that. It just takes the frame. Hey, is the frame destined to this machine? Yes. Yep. Just take it. Ship it to the OS. The OS will take it. Oh, it's a SYN. And it's destined to 80 and it's destined to this IP address? Yep. That's me. Let me add this to the SYN queue. And we'll add it to the SYN queue. Right, the app doesn't know about it yet. Right, the moment it adds that to the SYN queue, the OS kicks in and it will say, all right, it's time to start finishing the handshake. Right, so once it added to the SYN queue, the OS will kick in and they say, okay, let me take this SYN request because someone has tried to connect to me. Right, at this point, it's not a full fledged connection yet, it's just a request to connect, if you will. So the OS will take that SYN. They say, okay, SYN, I need to send a SYNACK. I agree. SYNACK will send a SYNACK to the client. And then we'll move on. Because it needs to receive the final ACK, right? So we'll move on. So meanwhile, lots of other sends are coming, connection to request, and they are added to the queue. Yeah? That's, by the way, how send flooding can happen, right? Because you're adding, blindly adding the send packets to this queue can easily get flooded, right? Why? Very easy. A client that sends a send and never acts. Okay? Just send. All of a sudden you're flooded. Nobody else can connect. Why? Because there is a timer. And the reason is every send that is received, right, is it automatically send act. Immediately it will be try to send act. The operating system will try to resend a send act back. And that will immediately fill back the backlog that we talked about. So you can increase the backlog, but you can decrease the backlog to prevent that. Send flooding has been solved with send cookies, but we don't want to go that right now. It's a different story for another day. But that's how it works. So let's say a legitimate client will send an ACK back, so completing effectively the handshake. So when the operating system receives that final ACK, it maps it back to an entry in the queue. It says, oh, you are from this guy, because the send will have a source port and a source IP and a destination port and a destination IP, and those four tuples will be mapped to that queue effectively, right? And that will effectively complete the connection. And the moment the connection is complete, it's popped from the queue. And now there is another queue that we talked about, the accept queue, which is basically a full-fledged connection to happen here. So, hey, I guarantee this client is good. He finished the connection with us. Again, we didn't send anything here. We're just connecting. We didn't even establish the TLS. I'm not even talking about TLS right here, right? It's port 80, right? The next thing is to send an actual HTTP request, right? But we sent that. And now that connection will be transferred to an accept queue. All right, what does that mean? It means that the operating system did its job. It's up to the application, which is moi. Remember, I listened. Listening to an app doesn't mean you have connections, right? You, as the application, which is the backend application in this particular case, have to accept connections, actively accept connections. So you have to technically ask the operating system, do I have a connection? Do you have a connection? Do you have a connection? Do I have a connection? Do you have a connection? That's how it works today, right? And you can do this by calling something called accept. And you might say, I never did this with Node.js. Well, Node.js does that for you behind the scenes. Yeah? There is an infinite loop that just accepts. Yeah? What is this infinite loop, you might say? It is in your thread, which is, again, we said it's a single thread app. So we have one listener. It has a loop that, and it's accepting all the connection. And the way it works, if it calls accept, if the function call accept will go to the operating system, say, hey, I want to accept the connection. So sure, you have one right here in the accept queue. Take it. And take it really means that it was going to be popped from the accept queue, and a file descriptor, a unique integer value, will be returned to that thread that it called accept. Whoever called it will get that file descriptor. And that file descriptor will represent your connection. And that is one client, one connection, one user connected to you. And then you can exchange information using that file descriptor. So the thread can write to the file descriptor and it can read from the file descriptor. And that's its own story, right? Reading and writing, there is asynchronous read, there is synchronous blocking read, and there is this whole new thing that Linux built called IOURing, which is a fabulous design for asynchronous reads and writes for everything, files, network calls, pretty much everything. right? So IOU ring, that's what it's called. But let's not get into a lot of details here. Let's keep this objective and to the point. Yeah, sure. What's the problem? I have a single thread. That single thread, which is Node.js, contrary to the belief, Node.js is a single-threaded app. Yeah, it has multiple threading app, but it has nothing to do with networking, right? The networking is still a single-threaded experience in Node.js. The only time Node.js uses a multi-threading, and it's documented, well-documented in Node.js, is when it does DNS entries and in specific libraries where it uses multi-threading. But DNS, definitely, right? And I suppose when it uses asynchronous file system reads. I talked about Node.js threading. Check out the video there. Just type Node.js threading Hussein, and you should find it. But yeah, but network, all single threaded. So that means I have a loop that accepts connection, and I have a loop that actually processes my request. So that's actually pretty cool. So that connection, that thread, will just accept the connections. So I have a connection file descriptor. What if another user came in, another connection request? Well, I'm just going to accept it again. The thread, if it's free, is going to accept the connection, and now I have another file descriptor. So now it's your responsibility to add it into an array, so to speak, right? Because if it's an HTTP request, you can do that, right? There will be an event that will be called for you, and they say, hey, there is an event, an open, I think connection open is called, right? In HTTP library itself. And that will be delivering you an actual connection object, even fancier than that, right? And the connection object will have methods like write and read, and this is how WebSockets work identically, right? The same thing. And you'll build basically an array of connection in your thread, in your process, and you can talk to any one of them, right? And every connection object will have an event associated with it. So, and what is happening is your app is constantly asking, hey, did I get a read here? Did I get a read here? Did I get a read here? Did I get a write here? All of this stuff is really going to be managed by the Node.js HTTP library and says, okay, something just came in from connection number one. Oh, something just came in from connection number 103, and so on, right? So we have one thread. What's the problem of this? It easily becomes the bottleneck, right? Because if one of those connections sent you an HTTP request, and at that HTTP request, you're doing a blocking call that is computing a hash or doing something so expensive, and let's assume you don't have threading, because if you do like a specific crypto operation, Node.js will use threading if you enabled it, but let's assume there is none, right? So if you're doing that compute, that expensive, let's say it's a loop, while loop, I don't know, while loop one through, you're done, basically. Why? Because now, it depends on what Node.js will do. I keep talking about Node.js as an example because it's a very popular backend, right? But if you build your own CE application, you have to do all this stuff yourself, right? So now you're blocked, and that quickly becomes the bottleneck. Right? The listener thread cannot do work, technically. You can, of course you can, if you know the limit. But at the moment you do work in the listener thread, in the same thread, then new connections cannot be accepted, or they will be delayed, because the moment the listener thread, the worker thread, will have a time to breathe, finally I'm done with this task. I'll go accept a connection. I'll go execute a read right here. Let me go. The user asked me to write something. So it's just busy doing stuff. You will be facing blocking at some point, right? So, now what do we do? Like, one use case, right, is what Memcached does. And we just did a crash course, architecture crash course on Memcached. What Memcached does is exactly identical, the same thing, right? It has one listener thread, but that listener thread only accepts connection. The moment it accepts a connection, it spins up a new thread and sends that connection file descriptor. It says, hey, thread, take it. That's yours now. I'm going to move on now. You have the file descriptor. You do a thing. If there is a read that comes into that connection, it's your responsibility. If you want to write, write to that. I'm not involved anymore. As a main listener thread, my job has done. I just accepted the connection. I handed you the connection. So the connection array, if you will, is not in the listener main thread. It's in the somewhere else. Keep shaking the table. Right? It's in the thread. So another connection came, spin up another thread. Another connection, spin up another. And there is a limit to the threads. I don't know what is the limit. I think it's 1,000, right? Because it will go crazy after a while, right? That's why Memcached say, hey, don't go above 1,000 per instance, because I don't know what will happen, right? It's fascinating. Once you know what's happening, it's just so cool to understand, really. Hey guys, Hussein from Post editing right now, and noticed that this is slightly incorrect reading through the Memcached, so I just wanted to clarify something. It sounds like the default number of threads in Memcached is 4. You can up that, but they do not recommend that, right? But every connection that comes in, right, will spin up a new thread, but up until the maximum number of thread allowed. So if you, the default is 4, those 4 will share these new connections. So every connection that comes in will be given to one of the available threads. So it's not one thread per connection. It's one thread, multiple connections per thread. Otherwise, as per the doc, I'm going to share it below as well. It's going to be a disaster if there will be like 1,000 connection and 1,000 thread. So one thread, multiple connection per thread. Just a slight clarification there. So just to be objective a little bit here. Back to the video. Yeah, so that's one way. So the work, the compute is done in the threads, right? That's my point with the multi-threading. So that's powerful. So now I accepted the connection with the multi-thread, right? Or with the listener thread, but the connections are being worked out in each and their own thread. So a read that is happening is a responsibility of the thread that should continue to poll for reads. Is there a read? Is there a read? Is there a read? Is there a read? Right? Or a blocking read or a IOU ring read. Depends whatever you use. The threads are doing this job now. So that's a model. That's one way to do it. So we talked about one way. Have one thread do everything. Accept the connection and do the work. Doesn't scale well, right? Another way, Memcached. Have one thread, accept all the connection, but send off these connections. Spin up a new thread for each connection and let the connection do the thread. What's the problem with that design? The problem with that design is one connection, not all connections are equal. What does that mean? A client that connected to my application might be greedier than other clients, right? One client might send very heavy requests, and another client might send lightweight request, right? Another request might just flood with me with requests that are so tiny. So they are not equal. What does that mean? It means that you'll end up with a thread that is so overloaded and other threads that have connections, but they're relaxed. They're just chilling, sitting there chilling, doing nothing or doing very minimum work. So you wasted memory on spinning all these threads, but those threads ain't doing much. Right? Why? Why is this the case? Because that's part of the problem on multi-threading we talked about initially, right? Multi-threading is just there is no knowledge. Knowledge. Tyler Pez. There is no knowledge. Doesn't exist. The knowledge doesn't exist between these threads. So you'll end up with unfairness. And this world that we live in is very unfair, my friends. It's very, very unfair. So one thread might do 80% of the work, while the other threads are sitting by the water cooler and drinking and chatting and just having fun. No. So another model is as follows. What if we do this? What if let the... So that's the third one now. Let there be one listener thread. Let that be multi-threading. But here's how we're going to do it. That thread is responsible to accept the connection. So we have the connections, but keep the connection arrays in the main thread. Isn't that just the first one? No. Wait a second. Let's do that. What if, since we're trying to solve this load balancing problem, right? What if we do this? What if we accepted the connections, we have this connection array in the thread, all the file descriptors, but we also read from all the connections, but we do not process. So we read the request. So the main listener thread is just accepting connections, saving these file descriptors, and also reading from all these connections. So it's reading request. Read request. Oh, you want git slash. This is git slash API. Oh, this is git slash blah. This is git slash. Oh. And now that it has the vision of requests, what it does is, hey, okay, I have a request. I think this is going to be expensive. Go there, thread. Hey, there's another request. Go there. There's another thread. All right. And it's, we start distributing requests to threads, not connections. The threads have no clue about connections here. So you just send requests. Boop, 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 boop. Send requests. Hey, process this, process this, process this. So now we just split the problem. That's a beautiful design. I like it a lot. Yeah? I like it a lot. Now, we kind of distributed the load because now if there is a thread that is doing a lot of work, the main thread knows about it. Hey, this thread is busy. It knows it's busy because, hey, it's talking to it. You can argue that this is part of the problem. We're talking to it. There is an exchange. But hey, you got to pay a price, all right? Nothing is free. But yeah, just talking to the thread. Talk through it. And then send requests. And hey, you're busy. Hey, here's a thread that is not doing anything. Hey, get back to work. Here's some work. Do some work. Stop sitting next to the water cooler. Do some work. Okay? No more sitting next to the water cooler. Okay? So, load balancing is solved. That's an interesting solution. That's a lot. I like it a lot. I forgot what app uses that design though. Here's another one. Go back to the original model. Right? No, let's do one more. So 1, 2, 3, fourth. A fourth one. We always talk about one listener thread. Why don't we have only one listener process? Why don't we have multiple processes listen to the same port? Ha ha! We can't. Have you even seen this error before? You listen to port 80 and you try to listen to port 80 again on another app. It says, hey, port is already listening. Ah, la, la. Can't do that. Right? That was by design. You cannot have two processes listen on the same port. But if you know what you're doing, you can turn that switch and let the operating system know, it's cool, operating system. I own these two puppies. So you can spin up two puppies, two threads, listening on the same port by turning on an option called SO reuse port, socket option underscore reuse port. It's like, hey, reuse port. So now you have multiple threads, listeners, listening on the same port. So now multiple threads, you can have 10 threads listening on the same port. So the operating system, and all of them are calling accept, are looping and calling accept. So now the throughput of accepting connection are way higher. You don't have a single right, accepting the connection. Because if you have a flood of users connecting at the same time, you're going to face trouble accepting connections, right? We talked about that, right? The accept queue might be full, and the app is not fast enough accepting these connections because it's just a single thread. So you do this, just scattershot. All of the threads are listener thread. All of them are listening. All of them are listening at the same time. And all of them are accepting connections. So it's an in parallel connection acceptance. So each of you, whatever connection you accept, it's your loot. You take care of it. It's yours. You process it. You do whatever you want. Proxies like Envoy support that. Proxies like HA Proxy supports that, I suppose. Nginx even supports that. Right? Because it's a busy. You do this when you have like a very busy backend. You accept like an API gateway, a load balancer, like a layer 4 reverse proxy. When you do that, even layer 7, doesn't matter, right? This gateway is going to have ton of connections. So you would need to accept as fast as possible connections, either deliver them to another thread. You can do that model, right? Instead of you, but then you're going to have a thread explosion, right? So comes to the fifth one now, which is kind of I like. Back to the basics, back to the original model. Single beautiful thread, it listens and it works. Mind as I say, you're not using your power of multi-core. Sure, I can though. What if I don't want to listen to the same port? Single threaded app, so simple. That's my job. That's my app. So my app becomes so elegant because it's a single threaded. It doesn't have this mumbo jumbo of threads and connections and loop and coordination. None of that. A single thread, you might say, Hossein, single core. You're not going to take advantage of your 16-core AWS instance here. I'll let you know. I have this beautiful thing, and I use this thing that's called Docker. Yeah? Put in my app in a container, and I spin up 100 containers of my application. All of them are different ports, sure. And then put that, and then let them do the work, right? In this case, can I have two containers listen on the same port? I wish I can. Like, if it's possible, then this is really good. Let the operating system handle that. I suppose you can. I never tried it, right? But that would be really cool. But even if not, then I can just do an IP table rule that just say, hey, if someone connects to port 443 or 80, load balance them through these guys, right? And you're going to have a process running on port 81, 82, 83. Just give an example. So now your app didn't change, but now you're just taking advantage of a single threaded app, but literally multiplicated, right? So you are taking advantage of your single machine cores, and at the same time, you kept your application simple. I like this design. I like it a lot. Hey, you might say one app might receive more load than the other. Then you might add another logic on top of it, like a layer 4 proxy that controls that. Maybe. Right? You can do that. Then, of course, it becomes kind of a single point of failure. Make it simpler. Make it a NAT level layer 4 proxy. I don't know. I just like that fifth model. It seems like it's so elegant and simple. I of course, nothing is free. I'm pretty sure it has its own problem. But simplicity, like going back to the basics. Okay. My app, having my app being simple is a game changer. That given that you have to of course write your app in a way that is statelessly-ish way. Yeah, in a certain sense. I throw an Arabic word there. And when I'm tired, specifically after a long day, like today, right? My English juice will deplete and I'll start throwing Arabic words because back to my native language. I work always, and by the time it's 6 p.m., I'll start just, I can't talk English anymore. I don't know, this is just me. All right, this is kind of an indication that I have to end this video. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed this video. I like this stuff. I like this a lot. I'm learning a lot. And if you enjoy this kind of content, consider becoming a member. This channel supports the show. Check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, if you prefer to listen to this. And check out my courses. This is kind of at the same realm, network.husseinnasser.com, for a discount coupon. Learn the fundamentals of network engineering, because anything that comes on top can be derived to its basic first principles. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm going to see you on the next one. You guys stay awesome. Goodbye.